This change in Oregon statutes would also bring Oregon in line with existing federal guidelines. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the veterans of this state feel that these previously mentioned disabilities are no less deserving than those in existing preference statutes. The sacrifices have been made. The entitlements are due. Briefly, I must speak about Section 2 of Senate Bill 710. Under current law, if both a non-veteran and a veteran score 100 points on any civil service test, then the veteran has effectively lost his preference. If a disabled veteran scores either 95 or 100 points, then he has been denied the use of either half or all of his earned preference points. Senate Bill 710 provides for a true veterans preference system in Oregon law by allowing the 5 or 10 point preference to be added to a passing score and by allowing the total test score to be either 105 or 110 for veterans or disabled veterans. This is a small but critical change. No longer will a veteran be discriminated against because of intelligence. Section 4 of Senate Bill 710 would open new doors of opportunities for Oregon veterans. This section deals with those state jobs for which there is no civil service test. These jobs are temporary and or seasonal in nature. These jobs exist in many state agencies, including, but not limited to, the Departments of Fish and Wildlife, Transportation, Forestry, and Revenue. To many veterans, the training and experience offered by these jobs could provide an entry into state employment. This section was added to this bill at the insistence of Oregon's veteran population. It would be another example of the state of Oregon being able to offer a hand and not a handout. Gentlemen, I must confess that unemployment statistics are seemingly a science unto themselves. But in preparing this testimony, I have learned several startling facts. The latest figures available to me from the United States Department of Labor show that in the state of Oregon, 12.5% of all Oregon veterans are seeking employment help at the Oregon Employment Division. Of course, this figure does not include some of those veterans who have exhausted their entitlements or those who are not registered with the Employment Division. My figures also show that over 15% of all registered applicants at the Employment Division are veterans. It angers and saddens me when I see able-bodied veterans standing in unemployment lines and then realize that many have been unjustly stripped of their employment preference entitlements. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this evening you have a rare opportunity to directly alter the way that many of Oregon's veterans are being treated with regards to employment. The veterans of Oregon respectfully urge you to recommend passage of Senate Bill 710. We recognize the difficulty of the decisions you must make and thank you for your past efforts and support. It seems at times that this nation and state have forgotten that the veterans are the Americans who went wherever and whenever their nation called. When America disowned the Vietnam War, it unfortunately turned its back on the men and women who gave so much of themselves during that time. Today's veteran represents a substantial resource to this state and nation, and therefore we must find ways to welcome them home. Your action tonight on Senate Bill 710 is one way of accomplishing that welcome. Thank you. I would be happy to try and answer any questions you might have.
Questions of the witness?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I want to, this is the first time I've encountered the veteran's preference, so I'm the subject new to me. I'm trying to figure out exactly who is now denied the preference. And if I read 408-235 correctly, and this is why I'm asking, so correct me if I'm wrong, those who served after the end of the war in Vietnam don't have the preference, but those who served during the war do, if they are disabled. Correct? And so what we're talking about, is, and Vietnam veterans who were not disabled had 15 years from their discharge in order to take advantage of the preference. Am I right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, you're absolutely right. There was a 15-year limit on veterans and no limit on disabled veterans.
Okay, so the disabled veterans of Vietnam or any other war continue to enjoy the preference.
They continue to enjoy their current preference.
Right. So what we're talking about then is extending the preference to non-disabled Vietnam veterans whose 15 years has run out. Right, so far?
I wouldn't phrase it that way, Senator, but yes.
And also to veterans subsequent to the Vietnam War.
That's correct.
And that's essentially what we're doing, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hill and Senator Benson.
I'm going to ask my question now because I have to jump back and forth between this committee and another committee. By repealing 235, also that I agree with Senator Shoemaker's observations about what it accomplishes. Do you intend to repeal the requirement that since 76, that is the end of hostilities in Vietnam, that the preference should be allowed only those veterans whose service occurred while the United States was engaged in armed conflict with the military force of another nation? I assume that if we happen to have any veterans living in Oregon who were stationed in Vietnam or participated in Grenada, the invasion, that they would be, that would be an armed conflict under 235. Therefore, they would be qualified for the preference currently. Do you intend to broaden the preference to all veterans, not just those who served during hostilities?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes, we do, for several reasons. One is the ambiguity in the law, which states armed conflict with military forces of another nation. This has never been defined. If I'm sure you'll recall, at the beginning of the Vietnam War, it was a Vietnam conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Korea, of course, was never a war. It was a conflict or a police action.
Mm-hmm.
We're very concerned about trying to tie some of these loopholes out of the law. Quite frankly, Senator, we feel that a veteran's preference is a veteran's preference, whether you're a World War I vet or a brand new veteran today.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we intend to include, the intent of this bill is to include all veterans.
Well, I have a question following up on that.
Senator Gretzky, I believe, had a question.
If he wants to follow up on Senator Hills, that's appropriate.
As I read the present statute, sub 3 of 408.235, of veterans, they don't talk about war, they do talk about armed conflict. Thus, service which occurred in an armed conflict, whether declared war or not, would entitle a veteran, subsequent to a current veteran, we'll call him, to the preference. In other words, it says a veteran whose service on active duty occurred after October 1576 may not use the preference unless such service occurred while the armed forces were engaged in armed conflict with military forces of another nation. It doesn't have to, have been a war. So it is a broader definition already. So really, I think it is
like
catching those veterans who served purely in a peacetime service when no armed conflict was going on. It doesn't say here that even the present exception doesn't require that that veteran have been involved in the conflict. I think I got that.
Additional follow-up on this is
go ahead.
Yeah, Senator Hill.
Okay, it's, I agree, looking at the, this is also the first time I've had a chance to look at the statute. It's never come before the committee while I've been on it before. But the current language appears to qualify all veterans whose service occurred while the armed forces of the United States were engaged in armed conflict with military forces of another nation. That would seem to currently qualify all veterans who were in service when Grenada occurred, the invasion of Grenada, under current language.
It would seem to.
It would seem to, but it's pretty unclear.
It is unclear, Senator.
What's unclear about it?
If, well, is that really the intent? I think if we read it literally, the effect is that everybody who is in the service, any service, except the National Guard or Reserve, when the hostile action in Lebanon took place and the Marines were killed in the barracks, or when the invasion of Grenada occurred, would qualify for the preference currently.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Everybody who was in the service at the time of those actions, mm-hmm. of those armed, I think it's fair to call those armed conflicts.
What about,
any kind, at least.
Well, Lebanon might not be.
Senator, what about the veterans who are serving in the Persian Gulf? We are not at war with another nation. Yet that those veterans are risking their lives, and people many have died.
And people are shooting at each other, for sure. And people did die. So I think that the current law would make eligible everybody who was in the service at that time. That's how I read it.
Senator, I read the current law that it would make ineligible the service personnel in the Persian Gulf. It's questionable about the Marines in Beirut. Were they fighting the armed forces of another nation? Were they fighting guerrillas? Were they fighting terrorists? As I recall, they were a great number were killed by a bomb driven by a terrorist. That does, in my mind, that does not fit the description of a military force of another nation.
That's probably true. And Grenada is a clearer case.
Grenada is a clearer case.
I think the Persian Gulf, that's not even a clear case, is it? It was kind of a free-for-all over there, wasn't it?
What about a military advisor in Central America?
Senator Gretzky?
Before I ask my question, I think his point is well taken. Defining an armed conflict with military force of another nation these days is impossible. And who's going to do it? An administrative agency head somewhere? I mean, that's pretty, I think it's fairly unworkable. My question is totally different. I don't know what it takes to get a Purple Heart. Could you tell me what that is? I mean, I know what it is, but how do you get one?
Senator, Chairman, Senator. The Purple Heart is awarded for a wound received while engaged with a hostile force. As I recall, that is close to the actual definition. There might be a requirement that you actually shed blood, the way it's written in the U.S. law. I would be happy to provide you with the copy of the regulation. You must be put in for it by your commanding officer. It is something that is not handed out indiscriminately. And as I said, federal guidelines do use it as a qualification for disabled veterans for employment purposes.
If someone is injured while serving, is it pretty much an automatic thing? Or if, is there some discretion there somewhere?
Senator, if not just while serving, while engaged in conflict on a direct basis with a hostile force.
So if you were hurt on a base, you wouldn't get the
in America, you wouldn't get the Purple Heart.
No, Senator. Or if you fell off a truck in Vietnam and broke your ankle or stuck a pole through your ribs, mm-hmm. you would not get receive the Purple Heart.
Would you be considered a disabled veteran? Probably would, wouldn't you? You still get that.
You could be considered a disabled veteran. It depends if the effects of that wound were disabling.
Okay, I see you have the OR in there, so it would include, your definition would include disabled veterans or Purple Heart. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Senator Shoemaker?
Yeah, on this question about disability, the present law requires that the disability be 30% or more, and you're supposed to take that out then, so that if a person receives any disability compensation at all, they would be considered a disabled veteran and entitled to the 10% preference?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes, that's our intention. There are many disabilities that are, no pun intended, quite disabling, that are only rated at 10 or 20%. I mentioned some of those in my testimony.
I imagine there are also some disabilities which are not at all disabling, which are rated at 5% or something.
I would argue that point with you, Senator, knowing how the Veterans Administration grants disabilities.
Mm-hmm. Another question, this doesn't have to do with an amendment, it has to do with the existing law. It's entitles a veteran to this preference if he's discharged with other than a dishonorable discharge. Now, in addition to dishonorable discharges, there are bad conduct discharges, there are administrative discharges, and your position is that those, notwithstanding that kind of discharge, they should, still should have the preference?
Yes, Senator, we are asking for no change in that portion of the law.
Okay.
That also is in a guideline with, or is in accordance with federal mm-hmm. guidelines.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions? All right, thank you, sir. How about Mr. Clark and Mr. Taylor, representing the Salem Vet Center and Eugene Vet Center? Does that sound like a pair we can draw to? Yeah, come on up, guys.
Want both of us or just one of us?
Sure, both, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Rich Clark. I'm currently the director of the Vet Center in Salem, one of four Vietnam Veterans Outreach Centers in Oregon. I was invited here by the VVA specifically for one purpose, to address the 15-year delimiting basis veteran status for Vietnam veterans. I believe you have a text that I prepared.
Yes.
I'm not going to go over that verbatim. That's for your reference later. But there are a couple of issues that I would like to address as a clinician. I have a master's degree in counseling, about 13 years in the field. This is my ninth year working with Vietnam veterans. Specifically, the clinical issues that have caused Vietnam veterans to stay out of the workforce for a number of years, and vet centers to this day see people coming in the door who have not, still not got their clinical issues under control, and it's been 20 years since their experience in Vietnam. What we're saying is that there are a number of reasons that Vietnam veterans can go 15 or 20 years and not seek employment, i.e. not take advantage of the veteran status, veterans preference status. One of those reasons has to do with the age factor, that Vietnam veterans were in that conflict. If you look at Vietnam as a generic trauma, which vet centers tend to do, and you look at somebody participating in that trauma at age 19, which was the average age of a Vietnam veteran, it's more likely that that person is going to incorporate that trauma into the thread of their personality, as opposed to adapting to a situation and being able to adapt out of that situation once they're removed from it. That's a real critical factor with a Vietnam veteran. And again, that particular trauma is incorporated into the personality structure. It becomes part of who they are. They see the world differently. They're irrevocably changed by that experience. Another critical factor with Vietnam veterans was a rotating tour. Ideally, the rotating tour was set up to remove veterans from the conflict after a period of exposure, in this case 1 year in Vietnam, because of the statistics in World War II and Korea, that an extended period of time in combat caused a higher incident of psychiatric casualties. So the rotating tour was set up prior to Vietnam or during the early part of Vietnam to decrease the number of psychiatric casualties during the conflict, which indeed it did. During the 10-year period that Vietnam went on, the number of psychiatric casualties was low. Unfortunately, what the rotating tour did was create a survivor syndrome and lit the fuse to a time bomb. And I don't mean time bomb in the sense of how Hollywood depicts Vietnam veterans, but post-traumatic stress is just that. It's stress that occurs after the trauma, and in this case, it can occur 8 to 10 years after the trauma. What happened as a result of the rotating tour was that the normal cohesiveness and unity that units need to survive a conflict, an armed conflict, was eroded because whoever went to Vietnam committed to staying 1 year and then coming home at the end of that tour, and caused them to have a lack of cause, a lack of commitment to the cause, coupled with the unpopularity of the war at home. The other aspect, once the veteran left Vietnam, was to come home to a hostile environment. And in our case, the Vet Center's case, treating veterans, we see veterans who have stayed on the periphery of things for the last 15 or 20 years are not able to be productively engaged in the workforce until they've been approximately a year of treatment in the Vet Center. And that doesn't mean these guys are crazy. What we're talking about is a natural reaction to an unnatural situation. Other populations have post-traumatic stress disorder. Vietnam veterans didn't invent that. Rape victims have it, victims of violent crimes, victims of natural disasters. But what we are talking about in this case is remediation of those issues related to the trauma a number of years after the trauma. So you're talking about a person who has lived 15 or 20 years, lived his life geared around how he perceives the world according to what he experienced 15 years ago, and it makes it much harder for them to reintegrate back into society. Vietnam veterans in particular are distrustful of authority because of feeling that it was misused in Vietnam. They're distrustful of institutions. That's why vet centers are set up in the community as storefront operations as opposed to a VA hospital. And that's part of the treatment issue for us. We have to deal with that on a daily basis with the population. Oftentimes they find out that we're part of the Veterans Administration, and that's a problem. But they don't see us as part of the VA once they come in, check out the environment, and get involved in the treatment process and get around other trauma survivors, in this case, other Vietnam veterans. Again, what I'm saying is that in this case, a 15-year delimiting date on veteran status is discriminatory with this population because it often takes that amount of time. In my case, it was 13 years after I left Vietnam before the vet centers were set up and I could even get access to treatment. So in that case, which I did not do, I didn't go to a vet center, but I would have had only 2 years to get things in order and work for a state agency. Or simply saying that there are some extenuating circumstances for this population that causes them to stay out of the workforce for a longer period of time. We're not asking, certainly not asking for sympathy. We're just saying that we would like just due. Personally, I don't feel like there should be a delimiting basis on veteran status. I think those of us who serve, and most Vietnam veterans indeed volunteered for that conflict as opposed to draftees in other wars, but those of us who did that are different as a result of that, and that status doesn't change for us. Why should it change on paper?
Senator Shumate.
I just want to be sure I'm correct that a veteran suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder is not considered disabled?
It is a compensable disability now.
Well, then if it is, there is no time limit.
No. Let me address that question. There are two categories of veterans. There are those who could be clinically diagnosed as having post-traumatic stress disorder and, in that case, would be eligible for compensation. And the awards generally range from 10 to 50%. 50% is high for a post-traumatic stress disorder claim.
30% fairly standard.
30% is about standard. There's another category. There are those veterans who have PTSD symptoms, post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, but don't meet the full clinical diagnostic criteria to have the disorder. What I'm saying is they could have the same issues going on, a distrust of authority, some alienation, anger, rage episodes, intrusive thoughts, nightmares. They could have a cluster of symptoms involved with their experience, but would not meet the diagnostic category, so they would fall outside of that that arena.
Has there been any study you're aware of that has determined how many are disabled and how many just have the syndrome but are not considered disabled?
The newest study done by the Triangle Research Institute states that there's about 15% of Vietnam-era veterans who could be clinically diagnosed as having post-traumatic, or who were clinically diagnosed as having post-traumatic stress disorder. There were 3.2 million veterans who went through Vietnam in the 10 years.
Okay. So that's 15% who are disabled.
Who meet the diagnostic criteria for post-traumatic stress.
Do you have any figure on the percent that has the syndrome and is handicapped but isn't disabled?
60.
60%? Is that where do you get that statistic?
Two or three different studies.
They're
estimating 60% have PTSD.
Could you put those on the record? I think it's important. It's important to me, frankly.
I don't have the information.
I'm sorting this thing out.
Could
you provide it to us?
I can get that information.
I'd appreciate that.
Sure.
You can send it to the committee council and we can distribute it to the committee.
All right.
Appreciate it. Further questions of the witness? Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here before you tonight, and especially to see Senator Cairns here. He and I have worked before with issues trying to resolve some injustice done to veterans, and particularly Vietnam veterans. I feel like I'm among friendly faces here. My name is Clifford Kaler. I'm from Eugene, Oregon. I'm currently a counselor at the Vet Center in Eugene. I've been there for about 8.5 years. The Vet Center's been there for about 8 years, so I've been there about 6 months longer than the center itself was. Helped establish that center. Before that, I spent 12 years working for the Employment Division, Oregon Employment Division, and was a supervisor with the Employment Division. And in fact, the last position I had, one of the jobs I supervised was Veterans Placement. In 1973, I was the Veterans Employment Specialist in Eugene, Oregon. Before that, I worked for the Employment Division in my home state of Ohio for 2 years. And before that, I spent 14 months in combat in Vietnam as an infantryman during 1967 and 1968, which included the Tet Offensive. So I feel I come to you somewhat as an expert witness, somebody who's been around the state of Oregon somewhat and has seen the insides and outsides of the Employment Division and the unemployment line. I currently work with Vietnam-era veterans and their families to provide readjustment counseling. A large part of my work involves employment issues because of my background. I have a lot of good friends that remain in the Employment Division and am able to sometimes help veterans access services of the Employment Division that might be a little shy of going in and asking for help or don't know how to ask for help in exactly the right way. My feeling about veterans' preference in employment is that it's a thank you. And that kind of thank you dates back in this country to the American Revolution, when the soldiers that left the Revolution got a mule and a quarter section of land to start their lives over. Those of us who served in Vietnam gave up parts of our lives to serve our country's needs, and while we were doing that, our peers were back here going to school and getting on with their careers. And some would argue that you never quite get over that setback. It seems to me that the 15-year delimiting date on the being considered a veteran is really unfair. In fact, I feel like it's a slap in the face. Just didn't have none as have that. When I raised my hand and swore to defend the Constitution of the United States, on March 7, 1967. I put my life into that promise. I was willing to give my life to this country, and I made that a lifetime promise. I still consider that a promise that I made and intend to carry that to the grave with me. So to tell me that I'm only a veteran for 15 years is somewhat of an insult, and I feel it's a greater insult to those veterans who didn't come home, who did give their lives. So excuse me, I need to get that out of the way so I can get back to being less emotional about the subject. The history of veterans' preference in Oregon, for me anyhow, goes back about 20 years when I came to Oregon. At that time, if you were a veteran, you were a veteran. If you were an honorably discharged, if you weren't a dishonorably discharged veteran, you were a veteran for the rest of your life. And you had a 5-point veterans preference if you were a veteran, and you had a 10-point veterans preference if you were a disabled veteran. Over the years, that veterans preference got whittled away through a series of administrative rules that later became law, to the point that now there virtually is no veterans preference in Oregon. This bill would restore those rights as they were 20 years ago. I find it a little curious that, maybe it's because I come from Eugene, that 20 years ago, during the height of the anti-war unrest in this country, that veterans in Oregon had more preference in employment than they have today. There's also a fallacy, there are a couple fallacies I hear being included in the argument here. That one is that because a person gets more points on a civil service test, they're therefore a better employee. That if I score 85 on a civil service test and you get 80, I'm going to be 5 points better of an employee of the state of Oregon or the federal government than somebody who gets 80. There's been no study that's correlated that. We really don't know what the civil service tests indicate, but they do.